Welcome back, everybody, to another quarantine edition of an Investor's Journey podcast. This is our Tips from the Pros edition. For those of you that are just joining us and haven't been here before, I'm reaching out to people that have been in the business for quite a long time and or are doing business the right way. So one of the things that we like to stick to in Prime Homes is to make sure that people understand that we're trying to do real estate investing the right way. And that, unfortunately, is something that not many people are focused on or trying to do. So I'm very excited to have this guy on today. He's somebody that we've been working with for quite a few years. We've known him for a few years, too. And he's one of the, whenever somebody asks me, you know, who's the wholesaler you work with, he's the one name I don't give out because I don't want people snatching up his deals. But he is the one wholesaler that I always trust, and he always tells me exactly what it is, how it is. The transparency with him, it's great to work with this guy. And he's been doing this for, I believe, 4 or 5 years, and he's still succeeding, still in this business, still being ethical. So very happy to introduce Mr. Michael Ironini. Welcome to the show, sir.
Appreciate the intro. I'm super happy to be on here.
Well, I appreciate to have you, man. So I've been wanting to get you on here for a while, but I've been so busy. And every time I look up, I'm like, shit, Tuesday went past again. And I kept missing Tuesdays. So I'm very happy to get you on here. So let's kind of jump into it a little bit. Are you from San Antonio?
No, not originally from San Antonio. We can start from the very beginning.
Yeah.
My family's actually from Nigeria. So from Nigeria, I was actually born in the UK. So born in London, England, lived in Maryland from about when I was a couple months old till I was in the fourth grade. So I think I was right before fifth grade. So I think I was about 11, 12 years old then. Moved to the Rio Grande Valley, down south, deep south Texas. And then I moved to San Antonio in 2015. So like a year after high school, moved to San Antonio.
Wow. I did not know that about you, actually. That's really cool.
Last name is not Italian. It's Nigerian.
That is really cool. So your parents, what made them come to the U.S. then?
I guess despite what you hear a lot, I guess now about how bad of a country this is, America's an awesome place. I mean, a lot of people around the world want to move here. There's tons of opportunity to do stuff, tons of freedom and all that. So yeah, this is the place to make it happen.
I'm glad you said that. I mean, a lot of people just don't know what it means to live outside the U.S. I've had the privilege of living outside for years and yeah, wouldn't leave this country. Really cool. So you were in Rio Grande, then you came up here. Did you go to college?
I did. So I did 1 year in the Rio Grande Valley there at University of Texas Pan American, and then 1 year at UTSA here, and then real estate from there.
And what did you do? What'd you go to college for?
I was in college for nursing, actually, which is something I guess a lot of people also don't know. I was in school for nursing. I was going to be going to the UT Health Science Center. I got accepted to their nursing program twice. I was actually a really, really good student, pretty much a straight A student when I was there. But got accepted to the nursing program twice. And the first time I really was not wanting to go. I had just kind of gotten into real estate at the time. And I was like, let me put this off a little bit. Because I knew a program like that, you really have to be extremely focused on. There's a lot of studying, reading, classes. So I was like, let me put this off. So the next semester, kind of, I guess, a lot of pressure in the family, reapplied. And I was just like, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. So.
And so you, that was that. And what made you get into real estate? Like out of everything out there, what was it that pulled you into real estate?
So it was a few things. One thing was my dad. So when we lived in Maryland, my dad did some real estate investing. He's more of a traditional investor, buying properties at auctions, having rental properties, putting 20% down. And he's kind of also riding the wave, too, I think, of the economy during that time where property values were really going up at a rapid pace, especially over in Maryland. It was a lot different than in Texas. So seeing some of the stuff that he was doing when I was kind of at a young age kind of attracted me to real estate. And then also, I mean, I'm really into cars. So like when I was young, I was like, oh, I want to have nice cars and some nice stuff when I get older. So I was like, okay, I need to probably get into like business or some kind of real estate or something so I can one day afford nice stuff. So I was like, all right, I want to get into real estate. And then, yeah, once I started hearing about, I guess, wholesaling and some of the different ways you can get in, not the traditional way, not putting the 20% down or having all the cash, I was like, let's do it. So, yeah.
What's your favorite car? What's that car that you're like, as soon as I can, this is the first car I'm buying?
The first car? So one of the first cars, I'd probably want an Audi R8 or a Nissan GTR. One of the first like supercars I want to buy. Man, if you talk about like a dream car though, there's so many crazy multi-million dollar, you know, one of 20 cars that are out there, yeah. I could mention. But yeah, first one, probably one of those. I actually have little model cars of those here.
Nice. So that's kind of like your vision board of what you're targeting.
Yeah. It drives me a lot. I know some people aren't really big fans of like materialistic things, but like it's something I love cars, dude.
Yeah. I love cars. Yeah, you got to do whatever works for you. I mean, if it's material, it is. If it's not, I mean, who gives a damn? You know, everybody's got their thing. Yeah. So that's what piqued your interest into real estate. How did you get going? Because wholesaling and all of that, you know, especially a few years ago and everything, wasn't that crazy mainstream and everything like it is now or like it's been in the past couple of years. So what was it that got you going into this? What did you hear a guru? Did you read a book? What was it that really got you into this?
Yeah, so I think when I got into real estate, I want to say it was like, I think it was 2015 or 16. I have to go back and look. But when I got in initially, so I had done a few other things before. I'd done insurance sales. I had been a personal trainer at a gym. I'd been in different network marketing companies. And some of those things, while they didn't really work out too well, they did get my mind kind of on the path of, I guess, personal development and growth. So there was just different stuff that I followed online relating to that. And one of the pages I actually remember following on Instagram had some guy who was just talking about basically wholesaling. He's talking about how he got a property under contract and then flipped the contract and made like $20,000 or whatever. So I was like, all right. Why would somebody sell you the property when they know you can make another 20 grand on it? Like, no, come on. Like, I've heard a lot of crazy stuff, but no. But I ended up following him though, nonetheless, and just learning more and more about it and started following other people from there. I was like, oh, this is this wholesaling thing. I guess it kind of makes sense. I did buy a course, which the course I wouldn't say was the best in teaching me a ton. It taught me kind of the basic stuff you can find on YouTube or Google search. But what it did do though is had people all over the country there in their Facebook group, and I remember typing in there like, hey, anyone in San Antonio? Had a couple people reach out, but once they found out, like, I was just trying to see if there's someone I could learn from. One of the guys was like, yeah, come to this RIA meeting, and you know, learn from these people and we can meet and stuff. So I met him there at the RIA, and from there he also decided, he was like, hey, I have this appointment tomorrow, you want to come out and check it out? So at this time I was in school too, I was at UTSA. So I started skipping a lot of classes, going to his appointments, seeing him get contracts, seeing him go to closings, doing some flips at the time too, going and checking on the flips and just learning stuff like that. And that's really how I got my start. And when I got my first deal myself, he kind of helped me walk through that as well. I've messed up the contract so many times. Like he had showed me how to write the whole Trek contract. And then once I got one, I still messed it up like three times. He's like, no, go fix this and that. But yeah, he ended up helping me through that deal and then ended up buying it too. So that was my start in real estate.
Very nice. I mean, I love the start that you had, and that's probably why I think a lot of your success has happened, is because you're doing the partnering, right? The right way of doing it, which teaches you all the right steps, how to negotiate, how to look at contracts. And a lot of people, they get so stuck on the money and so stuck on, you know, I want 100% of the deal, that they don't learn how to do the deal, how to structure the deals accordingly. And then it just makes them a terrible investor moving forward. You know, I mean, it's so hard for them to move forward. So So this guy was kind of like a mentor to you. Are you still in communications with him? Are you still working with him?
Actually, yeah. So I actually did a deal with him last month too. It was a property subject to. I referred to him. Not something I'd recommend people do, but it was just a referral, no paperwork or anything. I was like, hey, here's the deal. Put him in contact with the seller, and he bought it subject to and paid me outside of closing. So yeah, we don't do, you know, a ton of deals together anymore, but we still talk. I mean, if I have a question about like, hey, is there a contractor you recommend, or how do you handle this or that? We still talk pretty regularly and do deals every now and then too.
Yeah, man, the power of networking is underappreciated in this business, and people don't understand how powerful it is to have the right contacts and connections. What was your biggest challenge when you got started? I mean, that one thing that you're like, man, this was so hard to really get going.
The biggest things, one was marketing, which I think a lot of people struggle with, but I think bigger than that to me was just, like I said, it didn't make sense to me why. I just didn't think it was real, I guess, that somebody would sell their property at such a discounted price. I guess being young too, I just felt like all adults kind of had their stuff together. But there's people out there with problems, you know, people out there with, whether it's the tax delinquency or probate issues, and they didn't have a will and their family's fighting. Like, there's tons of different stuff, or people that just don't take care of their properties, and 20 years later, like, somehow it's, you know, in shambles. Like, they don't realize they have to maintain their properties, but whatever it is, people have problems. And when there's problems like that, people trade equity for speed and convenience, is what I kind of took a while for me to realize. Like, they're not always necessarily looking for top dollar, or they can't always necessarily get top dollar because of the situation. So in situations like that, we can step in there and we can make some money and help them out with that problem.
And I think you nailed it, you know, where you started off so pessimistic about the strategies, where a lot of people I see get in trouble because they start off thinking how easy it is and how easy they're going to make 20, 30, 40, 50 grand, you know, without knowing anything about what they're doing. And you got started and you're like, this doesn't make sense. Why am I going to make this money? So that convincing probably took you to really understand the business more, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So had to understand, like, you're not just like, no one really is. Like, I kind of had the thought in my head, like, why would someone just sell me the property at such a discounted price? So I do think some people just think everyone's just going to sell them their property at 50 cents on the dollar. It's not going to happen. So what I didn't realize is what the reason is why people would do that, because they have a real pressing problem. And sometimes the best, you know, it's like I said, it's not about the money. It's about getting that problem taken care of. There's people that are out of state, or there's a number of things it could be. So with situations like that, yeah, if you find those things and you know how to solve those things, then you can make some money. And I know we've talked about this a lot of times too. Like, a lot of the deals that some of the deals I've done sometimes aren't like, you know, you just get the property under contract, close 2 weeks later and you make some money. Like, one of the deals I just closed actually a couple weeks ago, it had a weird title situation, and just had to go speak to an attorney about it, speak with different title companies about it, and find and kind of push back a little bit, because the title company was saying they wouldn't insure it and close it. So because we were able to go ahead and figure that out and figure out the title stuff, we were able to close the deal and make some money. But it's not really just, you just walk into it and you just get paid. You got to figure something out and solve a problem.
Yeah. And what's actually funny is that that's one of the ways of that I found to be a good way of negotiating, is if you're asking yourself, why is this person going to sell me their house for a discounted price? And you can answer that. That's essentially their question, right? Why am I going to sell it at a lower price? So if you can come up with an answer for that, I mean, you pretty much are, you know, negotiating with them and telling them why they need to sell to you, you know? Gotcha. And if you believe it, they're going to believe it too. And that's really why I hate scripts, because I think it's very hard to sell with a script. Like, if you believe it and you understand why it needs to be done, I think you can sell it better to the homeowner than, you know, trying to go through a script and hope that the words are magical enough and it works.
Right, right. Yeah. And every situation is different too. There's no really two deals that are alike. So yeah, you really got to understand this stuff, you know, you got to understand the stuff and the situation and whatever person you're dealing with and kind of cater to that. It's not going to be the same every time.
So How long ago did you actually start with real estate investing? That you like, you know, you started skipping school and doing all that. How long ago was that?
Let me see. I graduated in 2014. So it was like August of 2015 when I moved to San Antonio, and then it was like a month after that I bought this course. So then September 2015 I bought that course, and then it was February of 2016 when I did my first deal.
Yeah. Okay. So you started with wholesaling, you started doing all that. What does your business look like now? Are you still just primarily wholesaling? What are you doing? What are you focusing on now?
Man, so it's something I really go back and forth on a lot, honestly. Like, to me, wholesaling is not really like the end all be all. I want to, you know, buy more properties, but sometimes it is tempting to kind of just get the check and move on. So I do wholesale right now. I actually have two flips going on as well, but then still doing wholesale deals as well. So it's something I'm still trying to figure out now, kind of what, because I feel like I should really focus more on one or the other, not necessarily only do one or the other. I do other stuff too. I've done some raps and some other stuff like that, but not necessarily that I should only do one strategy, but I should try to focus more on one. So trying to figure out where I want to go with that as well.
Yeah. And are you just one person on your team, or do you have a team? Do you have employees, VAs? Like, what's your operation look like?
Yeah. So I have a VA, who just does like list pulling, skip tracing and some stuff like that. Little data entry, things. And then I have, another guy, I don't know, I guess you can call him, not really a partner, but we work together on a lot of stuff. He manages, the text messaging stuff we do. Also goes to appointments, and we work some deals together. So just the three of us, really.
And how has that been? Because I mean, trying to scale and trying to grow a business is not easy, especially in real estate, when everybody you speak to thinks that, you know, they can do it themselves and they can do it better and make 100% of the money. You know, why partner with somebody or work with somebody and get paid less? So how has that process been on trying to get people and trying to build your team? Has that been a challenge? Have you found some ways around it? How's that looking like?
Mm-hmm. No, it's been a challenge for sure. So like one thing I know I've tried to scale a couple different times is cold calling. It hasn't worked out too well for me to try to, I guess, outsource that or get other people to work on that. The texting has, but like that other gentleman though, he's not an employee though. He's someone who gets paid a percentage of the deals, which I think, I don't want to say it's not possible. I'm sure there's people out there that are doing it, but what we do in real estate, I don't think it's necessarily something you can have a low paid employee do and spend the time to actually kind of learn the stuff we know and then go do it for 12, 15 bucks an hour. So, I mean, he has, you know, significant upside in the deals, and he makes money based off the deals closing and whatnot. So he's got incentives to learn and improve and grow, but he doesn't at the same time want to take on some of the, I guess, the risk, the overhead, some of the marketing costs and stuff like that. He also doesn't want to have his own business. But he does want to learn real estate though. He's already done several deals, we've done together. But that's the way I kind of structure stuff like that. And also too, it's not the easiest thing to find people that are also credible and ethical. I mean, especially in real estate, like there's people who kind of say one thing and kind of twist the truth a little bit and want to mess around with sellers. I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that. So also not just finding people who are kind of competent, but finding people who are also ethical. It's definitely a challenge.
Yeah. A lot of people that I've come across that want to get into this business are so money hungry that when you're that money hungry, you tend to make all the wrong decisions. You know, you tend to want to go ahead and just contract a deal, even though it doesn't make sense, or you're screwing over the seller or the investor, but they want that money. They want that paycheck, you know, and it just makes it so much harder. Cause I mean, this business is all about credibility and you know, for yourself, you've learned that credibility is hard to build, but very easy to destroy, right? That if you don't take care of it, all this hard work that you've put in could just all vanish that quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So your leads, do you generate them yourself, or are you buying from wholesalers? How do you get your leads from?
Generating myself. I mean, some referrals I get at this point. I get referrals from some people I've done stuff with in the past, like some property managers. Like, hey, I got this. One of my landlord clients is looking to liquidate their properties, reaching out to me. Some agents refer stuff to me, but mostly generating them myself.
All right. And what does that marketing look like? Like, what do you target? What are you doing with your marketing?
So right now I do two things. I text and I cold call. I was previously doing direct mail. I decided to just cut that off completely after some testing. It wasn't really working the best for me. So cold calling and texting, hitting up people who are on code violation lists, water lists, high equity lists, people that have different kinds of liens on their properties. There's a number of things. I could probably look up all the different lists, but yeah, there's a number of different lists that I target and reach out to.
And do you do list stacking? Like, do you combine a lot of the lists to see who hits multiple? Or are you targeting certain zip codes or sites of San Antonio? Like, what do you target? Do you target certain types of deals? Like, you want more flips, rentals, owner finance? Like, what's your focus?
Before I was looking for more of the owner finance stuff. Right now I'm really not. So that's, like I was telling you, I kind of wanted to figure out what I wanted to focus on. I hadn't decided I don't want to focus on the owner finance stuff, but still going between the flips and wholesales. But usually, so when I wholesale too, I think something that's really, I guess, helped me do better wholesaling is I really try to only focus on stuff that I want to buy myself. So it does help to put you in a better position too when you're trying to sell that deal, because I know that if for some reason I'm not able to get a buyer for it, like, I'll close, I'll buy it. It's not a big deal. So yeah, I just focus on really kind of the northern half of San Antonio is really where I look to target. Yeah.
Nice. I like that. What you say, I mean, that's exactly how we got started in wholesaling and why we didn't kill it in wholesaling, because we were always trying to find out what did a deal look like, right? What does a good rental property look like? What does a good flip look like? Because then when we generate the deals, we know how to buy them ourselves for when we're ready to flip, when we're ready to do a rental and stuff like that. So we left a lot of money on the table while we learned. But now we're able to pick up all the deals ourselves, and we know we're picking up good deals, right? Because you're wholesaling something that you would keep otherwise.
Right, right. So, yeah, it really teaches you a lot to put yourself in the kind of the buyer's shoes.
Right.
It's something that I really think that would benefit a lot of wholesalers to actually maybe do a flip or partner with somebody on a flip or something to understand that, because there's some misinformation out there about kind of what it takes to do a flip, what it costs to do a flip. It's more than just, your purchase, rehab, and your sales price. There's a bunch of different holding costs and closing costs. Just the hidden cost of flipping a house and the ability to kind of, go over your budget or have certain things you run into with the city or some of these. Like, one of the hot things right now is like the historic properties, the conservation properties. But you run into a lot of extra stuff too doing those houses with those, the conservation district and the historic department, things that they have to approve. So
yeah,
I think it'd be beneficial, it is beneficial for sure for people like us who are wholesaling to understand that a little bit more,
So when you are doing your marketing, right? So you started doing marketing, it was a big challenge, and it's a big challenge for a lot of people, which is why I'm on the topic a little bit more with you. Being that you generate your own leads, is how do you determine? So you say, you have lists that you target, but if we go to it, I mean, there's a ton of lists that you can get, right? I mean, there's no shortage of lists to get for real estate. But how were you able to determine to say, these lists are the ones that I want to focus on? Was it trial and error? Was it just being in the market? Like, if somebody doesn't know where to start marketing, like, what do you recommend to them?
So it's trial and error, but also focus. Like I had mentioned before too, I was doing direct mail and I stopped doing that. So I was doing that and looking at kind of the numbers, like how many mailers am I sending out, the leads, the appointments, the deals. It didn't make sense, so I stopped doing it. So kind of doing that with your other marketing, but also not doing it too short of amount of time. Like it's something that you probably need to do for any marketing channel for 3 to 6 months and see what the results look like before making a decision whether you're going to continue or stop. So that's a big thing, not being too emotional about it, but looking at the numbers, see what the numbers say. But also when pulling a list too, I think it's best to start with kind of niche stuff. So stuff that shows some kind of distress for whatever reason. Because obviously, I mean, we're looking for properties usually that have equity, but that's not a sign of distress though. So when you have properties that maybe, you know, are vacant for some reason, or you know that someone's passed away, or you know that they have certain liens on them, you know that there's probably some sort of distress there. So those, I think, are better things to go after to get deals. However, there are a lot less of those, but that's where I would start. And also kind of just putting yourself in that person's shoes and thinking like again, let's back to the high equity. That's a common list. I know a lot of people talk about the high equity absentee. So if I'm being absentee just means you don't live at the property that is on the county records. So you get your mail basically at another property. Does that necessarily mean you have some kind of distress? Not at all. I mean, I know you have rental properties that you're not distressed. Right. You're not going to be selling them to me at 50% on the dollar because you're absentee. You know, you'll have equity in the properties. That doesn't mean you're distressed. So a list like that maybe isn't necessarily going to be have the most motivated people or the most likelihood of someone being motivated to sell. So kind of just reverse engineering it like that and thinking about, you know, what shows signs of a problem. Because again, we're looking for problems, not so much because we want to target those people. Like, I mean, of course, we do want to target those people, but because that's where we can step in and help solve those problems. If there's no problem to solve, there's nothing for us to do. So we want to find those problems, solve them, and then, you know, of course, we capitalize and helps the seller out too.
So kind of touching on that point, I like bringing this up as much as possible, is you were kind of put in a bad light by the Rivard report because you were supposedly targeting people with their water that had been shut off, right? So they made it seem like, you know, investors are predators and are taking advantage of people's hardships and all this nonsense. So you want to kind of cover like what happened there? And
yes, absolutely. So when you're marketing and looking for deals, you know, you target, right? So I don't know, how can I say this? So to me, it's not really predatory, because there's certain people that just kind of fit the demographic of who would be who's likely to sell their house, who would need to sell their house. And there's also a lot of people too, who I know most realtors won't work with or don't know how to work with because of certain things they're going through, or they just aren't interested in representing people with properties like that. But moreover though, the article is saying that we're investors for reaching out to those people with their water shut off or being predatory. But if someone has their water shut off for non-payment, which I think is what they were kind of thinking I was reaching out to, you know, a couple $50 bills is not going to make somebody sell their house to me at, you know, 70 cents, 50 cents on the dollar. It's not going to happen. What I really look for is the vacant property. So someone who has a property, they bought it or they inherited it or whatever the heck happened, and it's sitting there with no utilities on. Like, nobody buys a property or has a property for it to just sit there. You know, they turn into a rental property, they live there. It's not providing anyone value if it's just sitting there. So it's not providing the city value. A lot of times they have delinquent taxes if they're just sitting there, or someone's paying for those taxes and getting no value out of it. So it really does the majority of people a benefit for us to actually reach out to them and buy those houses rather than them sitting there vacant. So that's really how it's not just, I mean, sometimes you can kind of fool yourself into thinking a certain way because it benefits us, but it's the truth though. Yeah. These vacant properties don't really benefit the owners of them. They don't benefit the neighbors of them. There's more likely to be broken into and vandalized and all sorts of things. So when you're looking for someone with a problem, it's not necessarily that you're being predatory, but you're trying to help them with that problem. Someone's got to help them.
Well, I mean, much like you're saying, you know, if somebody has their water shut off, which is a necessity, You know, it's not like they don't have internet. Like, you have your water shut off. You're not, how are you going to survive, right? I mean, that's your most basic need. So they're obviously going through hardships. They obviously have an issue if they live in the property. And if they don't live in the property, then there's something that they can't afford the property that they own, right? So there's something there that is causing their waters to be shut off. That's not something that you're being predatory. It's like somebody's probably struggling one way or another. And I know it's happened to me, and I'm sure it's happened to you, that you reach out to these people and you offer them a solution. And a lot of times they didn't even know they had another option.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I tried to, because afterwards I read the article and how they framed you. I reached out to them because I was like, hey, that was extremely unfair and extremely one-sided, you know. Yeah. And then they interviewed us on it. And that was the point that we were trying to make on that, is there's a lot of times that these people do not know they have other options. They think that that's it, that they've hit the end of the road. And I know it might seem ridiculous to a lot of people listening, right? Because we're all in real estate. So you're like, how is it that some people don't know? There's a lot of people that do not know there's other options out there, that there are people like us that can actually come in and take care of everything, and they can just step aside, right? And they can just walk away from the house or whatever it is, and we can solve that. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've come across people like that countless times.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's so many people I've spoken to who think that, you know, maybe they don't have their parents' probate done, or their parent passed away without a will, so they think there's nothing they can do. They think they have to pay back taxes in order to be able to sell the property. There was someone I spoke to actually earlier today, and their property, they're behind on their mortgage. And a lot of times when someone's delinquent, the bank will send somebody out to the property to look and see if it's vacant. And if it is, then they'll change the locks on the property and kind of secure things, make sure everything's okay, kind of protect the asset they have. So this person thought that the house had already been foreclosed on, there's nothing they can do. I was like, no, that's not the case. Like, you still own the property. It's scheduled for foreclosure right now, I think it was in August. So I'm like, no, you have plenty of time to sell it. I mean, if you want to. So there's things like that. But people sometimes just don't know that they have options. There's stuff that they can do. They think, you know, I'm just going to abandon it.
Yeah. And the way home values have appreciated lately, I mean, there's people that we've spoken to that they're about to let their house go into foreclosure because they think they have no other choice. And it's like, you can still walk away with money, you know, and take care of your loan. And they're like, oh, I didn't even know I had an option, you know. Yeah. And that's really, when you do real estate investing the right way, that's really what we deliver, right? Unfortunately, and especially nowadays and this is the point of this show and everything, is that you go on Facebook and you see all these charlatans and characters out here showing how they're killing it in real estate, and they're, you know, $30,000 check for 20 minutes of work or all this nonsense. And these are people that don't give two shits about whether the homeowner is being taken care of, whether that the investor got a good deal. They could care less about any of those things, right? All they care about is making money and looking good on Instagram. And yeah, it gives us all a really bad name. That's why, you know, a lot of times when people ask me, what do you do? And I hesitate to say real estate investing, because it's like, it's become almost the new used car salesman, you know? It's like, you probably screw people over.
Right. Yeah, it gives us a bad perception out there.
Yeah. So you're marketing for these leads. So you explain kind of like how your funnel works, right? So you're finding, you have more or less a target area that you like to look at. You've done this before, so you have a few lists that you like to target, like the water shut off, code violation, which I was looking at the code violation. I didn't realize that there's like 15,000 violations.
Yeah, it's like 15,000, give or take, every month.
Jesus.
Yeah. Like, I don't need many properties.
Yeah, that's a very big book of violations that you got to keep track of. But yeah, I mean, so you have all this. What does the funnel look like? You compile the list, and then do you start calling? Do you start texting? Like, what does your process kind of look like for marketing?
Yeah, so we go ahead and just call and text these people. Do both. Some people like to do one before the other, whatever. But we do both at the same time. I do kind of keep track of the people who say, of course, they don't want to sell it. But the people we already speak to, I keep track of just to make sure we're not hitting them with one or the other when we already spoke to them. But reach out to them. The people who say they want to sell, then kind of go ahead and qualify them. The ones who we're talking to on the phone, obviously, through calling, we can go ahead and just talk to them right there. The ones that we're texting, try to get them on a phone call and not just handle everything through the text. But then I use call it the four pillars of pre-qualification: the condition of the property, motivation to sell the property, timeline to sell, and the price. So try to get those four things to qualify and determine, is this a lead that I want to work with or someone I want to deal with or not? So usually when I'm talking to someone, I try to kind of warm them up a little bit first. So talk to someone just about general stuff like confirm the square footage, beds and bath, and then figure out, okay, like a little about the condition. Like, have you done any remodeling to the kitchen and bathroom in the last 5 years? How old is the roof, the AC? How's the foundation there on the house? Kind of things like that. Just to kind of get a general idea of the house. And then also ask too, you know, sounds like it's a great, even if it's, it sounds like a complete mess. Hey, it sounds like it's a great house. Like, is there any reason why you're looking to sell it? And just see what their motivation is or what they say, why they say they're looking to sell it. And then also, you know, hey, if we can work out a deal, how soon would you want to close and get your money? So just try to figure out what their timeline is to sell the house. Someone says they want to sell in 2 years. I probably won't spend too much time with them or really, no, might follow up with them, you know, a year from now or a few months from now. But want to figure out what their timeline is. And the tougher one to usually get over the phone is the price, especially on the first call. But I'll try to figure out their price. And usually what I do, because a lot of times you'll get people who won't give you a price. So if their condition, motivation, and timeline sounds like, you know, what I'm looking for, then I'll just, you know, go ahead and go out, take a look at the property or continue with them. But if it sounds like they've got a pristine property, they're not, you know, they're not really looking to sell, or they're just selling just to buy a bigger house or whatever, then I'll just throw out usually around like 60% of whatever Zillow says, just as a number. Mm-hmm. And I just say, okay, well, I'm typically buying houses similar to yours in the area for around $50,000. Is that something you think you might consider? Or whatever 60% is. And just see what they say. So from there, some people are like, oh, no way, I wouldn't sell it for that. Or, yeah, I'd consider that. So just to kind of gauge and see where they're at. Because that's something I know initially when I started marketing. I did spend a lot of time with kind of tire kickers or people that were never going to do business with me. So I've really incorporated that. Or what I would do is I would go run comps on the property and try to get all in depth and detailed. And then come to find out later the person's looking for, you know, $20,000 over retail. So if they're not showing any signs of distress or any problems or rough property, I'll throw that out for them. And then just try to take a look at the property and make an offer, get it accepted, contracted, and get it done.
Just that simple.
Simple. I mean, a lot of times there's a lot of hair on them, you know, so a lot of times, you know, you ask, like, why are they looking to sell? Then you got a whole story, you know, you got all this, well, like, you know, the property is like this and I haven't been there in a couple of years, or I have this going on, I need to get some money and I haven't been able to pay this and I'm kind of sick and lots of different things like that.
What's the typical length of a phone call for you?
Initial calls are usually around maybe just like 10 minutes or so. Initial phone call. Yeah. When it's going to be a lead. Yeah. It takes a while. And I mean, you really have to be a good listener too, to get deals. So, you know, as us as real estate investors, sometimes we're just looking at, you know, the numbers, but when it comes to, you know, generating your own leads and deals, and being that problem solver, you kind of play the role as like a therapist too.
Yeah.
And as a therapist, you can't just be talking numbers and really, you have to be listening. So a lot of times people just talk about whatever problems they have going on, family issues or issues with the property or memories. Just listen and hear that stuff out. So it can take a while.
I've had some calls take north of 2.5 hours at times.
Yeah.
That they just, you know, the more they give, the more they want to give, and the more they keep giving, and it's just like they just never stop. And you don't want to cut them off because they're just giving you more reasons of why they want to sell. And you want them, right? Because those are going to be all great reasons to use, you know, to say, well, sounds like you really need to let go of this property. So,
you're right.
Yeah. So you got that going. And what does your systems look like? Like, you have a follow-up system? Like, what do you have, a CRM that you like to use? And then when you're talking to these people, maybe they're not, you know, that crazy right now, what's your process for, do I follow up with them and, you know, every other week, once a month, what's that system kind of look like?
Mm-hmm. So I use just Podio as my CRM. There's a couple different apps I have built out in there to keep track of all the different leads that come in. And in there, I just have all the different information about that person. And every single time that there's a contact to, just input notes about how that was, whether they answered the phone, didn't answer the phone, I called them, text them, and how the conversation went. Because after a while, too, you lose track of, you kind of forget the conversations, or not necessarily forget, but you need a refresher. So I'll go look through those notes and like, oh, okay, yeah, that's what we talked about. That's what's going on with this person. Just call them up again. And also there in Podio, I have all the follow-up reminders. So I can set tasks for myself and for my other guy. So that way he can go ahead and call people, or I can call people, text people, and reach out to them on whatever day. Sometimes it's, you know, if there's a certain day they ask to be reached out to, or sometimes people say, hey, reach out to me in 2 months, I'll reach out to them in like 1 month. When there's people who maybe you reach out to them after that, you know, 2 months that they say to reach out to them and then they're not answering the phone and getting back to you, I'll reach out to them, you know, a couple days after that again. And then a couple days after that again. And then if they're still not responding, then kind of push it back to like a week and then 2 weeks, and then put them on like a 1 month at a time until I hear back from them. So I really never stop following up with people until I either get a note like, you know, I don't want to sell anymore, or we go ahead and do something together. There's actually a deal I closed. I think it was in March. I was following up with that guy for like 16 months or so before we did the deal. Tons of calls and texts and all that. But yeah, just keep following up with them. You have to really build that pipeline up. I mean, it's not really one seller you're going to reach out to and then it's just going to be a deal. You have to have lots of leads and sellers in there, and then a few are going to pop, you know, every single month. So,
well, and then it's also a lot of people think that, you know, just that initial contact should be a deal, right? Yeah. And sometimes that's just the groundwork that you got to lay, and it still takes follow-ups and maybe still like a lot of, you know, no, I'm not really interested. And maybe you sense, like, it's happened to me a lot of times where they're like, no, but it kind of sounds like maybe, and, you know, and you're like, well, that just goes into the pipeline for follow-ups, right? You just got to keep going. You got to read between the lines.
Yeah. Because even the most deals, I think it's usually about like 3-4 months from when there's initial contact to when it turns into a deal. So if you just reach out to them one time, if they don't want to sell and want to meet with you right then and there, and you're throwing them out, you're going to lose a lot of money doing that. Because if you can be reaching out to those people and then have them convert in 3 to 4 months, then you just have to keep building that up, and it kind of lags behind a little bit. But what you know, what you're doing today is going to produce for you a couple months down the line and turn into a deal at that point.
And that's why you can't stop marketing. I mean, that is one of the things I always tell people. It's so hard to start, but once you start, you just cannot. It's kind of like going to the gym, right? It's so hard to get that routine going. But once you finally get it going, like, you just have to stick, because as soon as you stop, it becomes a nightmare. And then you just get fat again in like a week, and then it goes all out the window.
It's like 3 months of consistency and then 2 weeks off and it's gone.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's a really good analogy. That's how it is. You really can't stop. And that's something as well that I know I had struggled with a lot before, is just kind of, you know, getting, you know, having two deals under contract and then just being like, okay, I'm just going to focus on getting these deals closed and handling the title stuff and all that. And then once they close, it's like, all right, I got nothing going on. Let's get back to it. Then you got to build that back up again. You get a couple deals in your contract. All right, cool. We're good. You stop the marketing. And then once those finally close, all right, what do I do now? So you have to continuously be doing it if you're going to do it.
Even though they're on the contract, that means nothing. Like, you got to go and get the next one and go and get the next one. Because even, I mean, there's been a lot of times for us, I don't know if it's happened to you too, is that you have a deal on the contract and you're like, I'm going to make like 25 on this. And then all of a sudden, like, just this problem comes up, this lien came up, this other thing jumps up, this and that. And then it becomes a nightmare. And then it's like, oh, shoot, you know, maybe I'm walking away with seven. And, you know, and it's like you would thought you were going to make 25 and that was going to take care of X number of months. And now it's like, no, you're walking away with seven. So if you gave up on the marketing, like now you're really hurting.
And that's a really good point, because that's another thing I actually want to bring up. So sometimes deals don't close, you know, sometimes there ends up being some sort of title issue that, you know, maybe it takes a while to close, or maybe it just won't close at all. Because I've had that happen too, where there's, you know, family issues, you need to affidavit heirship, and then you have one sibling who's like, no, I'm not signing. So when that happens, I mean, your deal's gone. So that deal you put all your effort and intention on is gone. So you can't do that. You have to continuously be kind of focused on the next one almost as soon as you get that contract or get that deal.
I agree. And what are some tools that you recommend? So you say you do cold calling and text messaging and all of that. What are your favorite tools that you like using for that, for doing that?
So I use a Zencall. That's Xencall. Zencall is what I use for cold calling. I use CallRail for phone numbers and the call tracking. I use Lead Sherpa for text messaging. What else do I use? I use PropStream to pool a lot of lists. Not a lot of lists, but a few lists. A lot of the lists I actually pull, I pull directly from whatever source it is, whether it's from the city or county records. I pull those directly from them. But I use PropStream to pull a few different lists. What else is there? Batch Lead Stacker. I use them for skip tracing and also to stack lists and also just to hold all my lists together. They keep all those in their database. What else is there? Podio, I mentioned, it's a CRM. That's really the bulk of it. Oh, another good one. I use something called Sweet Process. That's Sweet W or Sweet. That's basically I use that to train my VAs and also to actually to train to keep processes in order for myself. So that way, whatever it is, like whether it's how to cold call, how to qualify a lead, how to pull a certain list, how to skip trace, I have processes mapped out with videos to kind of remember how to do each of those things. Because honestly, I forget a lot of stuff. But also, whenever I have something new I want to teach my VA to do, I make a video and a process in there so that way I can show him how to do it. And he's actually worked with me for like 3 years. But should, you know, he ever decide he wants to go on somewhere else or something happens, I have all that there so I can train someone else and just show them the videos and they know how to do it.
And what is that site?
Sweet Process.
Sweet.
Yes, that's Sweet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, where do you find your VAs?
Just through Upwork.
Upwork? Are you looking for VAs that have real estate experience? You looking to train? Do you look for prices? Like, what's your hunting look like?
Just people that are good with simple computer skills, like with PDFs, email, Microsoft Office, you know, Word, PowerPoint, Excel. Simple things like that is that's really all I need. Someone I can show how to do stuff like that.
All right, nice. All right. How has your marketing been affected since this whole COVID thing started? Like, how have you noticed your leads drop? Have you, how has that affected you?
It's not so much anymore. So initially, a lot of people were kind of just putting things on hold. So people who were living in the properties and were wanting to sell for whatever reason were trying to, they didn't want to move. They didn't want to get out of their house and have to go figure out where else they're going to go live. So they're putting things off. Lately, I've seen a lot more people who, I don't know, they're kind of over it or they're more urgent now. For the most part. But what I think has been the best, I really have tried to focus a lot more on properties that are vacant, and properties that are higher distress, because some of those other, I guess, less distress lists, the absentee and high equity, those people, some of them that did want to sell, I think a lot of them that did want to sell are not selling. And that's something that's pretty apparent too. Like I've seen in on the MLS data through Sabor that there's a lot less active listings going on the market. And I think that's kind of represented too with the off-market stuff that we're doing, the leads we're finding, because a lot of people, unless they really need to sell, they're not wanting to sell right now. They're not wanting to move right now during all this that's going on. So that's kind of what I've noticed.
Interesting. And then how has it been dealing with the sellers? I mean, are they fine with you coming to see the house, or are you having like to have them send you pictures? Like, have you had to deal with any of that?
Yeah. So sellers have still been fine. I always ask sellers though, you know, what their comfort level is, you know, how they want to handle that. If they want me to wear gloves, masks, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And also ask too that they like turn on all the lights, have doors open, so not having to touch stuff there at the house as well. That's how I've been handling it. But again, more than that though, is just trying to go after, putting more effort into those properties that are vacant to where you don't have to have interaction with someone's stuff and the person in general.
And has your deal flow dropped even looking at that? I mean, are you finding it harder to find those deals?
No, like initially I say yes, like for the first couple of weeks, but after that, things have really kind of, it's more back to normal now, I think.
Really?
What I am seeing a little bit, that's a little bit different is on the buyer side. So when wholesaling deals, there's more buyers now, again, who are buying again than before. I should say investor buyers, but there's still less than I think pre-COVID. There's still buyers who are sitting on the sidelines, buyers who are kind of scared for what's going to happen or unsure of what's going to happen. So they're sitting on the sidelines just watching, or they just completely left and went to a different industry altogether.
So do you think that there's more, the stupid buyers have left the market, or do you feel
yes.
like, okay, so you have people that right now are looking for really good deals, so maybe it's a little bit harder to wholesale tighter deals and stuff like that?
Yeah. That's a little bit more blunt, but like accurate way to say it. A lot of the buyers were kind of novice, didn't necessarily know what they're doing as much, didn't have as much experience, have left the market, I'd say. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think that's probably why you haven't had such an issue finding the properties, because a lot of these wholesalers that were saturating the market before and pushing off these terrible deals are just off
Same
to
thing.
The next thing.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's good. That's good to know. And your buyers, have you reached out to any buyers as far as maybe lenders and stuff like that? Are they like kind of holding off as well? Like when you need money to flip your houses, so are your lenders like holding off as well, or are they still kind of gung-ho ready to invest?
So I use both private and hard money. Some of the private lenders, you know, there's a few that are kind of, I guess, medical professionals. They were holding off initially because some of the, you know, the doctors and stuff weren't able to work. I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, thanking our frontline workers and nurses and doctors, but a lot of the doctors actually were not working. So they were a little, they didn't want to be putting money out because they didn't know what was going to happen with their job and when they'd be able to go back to work. And then as far as hard money, the rates have gone up with a lot of lenders. They're charging more points or more interest, or they're also lending less. So before, a lot of lenders were lending, like, let's say 70% of ARV, some of them are down to 60-65%. So you have to have more of a down payment or more cash out of pocket at closing to buy these properties with hard money. And there's some lenders who just aren't lending at all as well. Some hard money lenders who just said, no, we're not going to do anything until we know we're in the clear.
Wow. And that's probably what's pushing a lot of the buyers off the market too. I mean, that easy money is no longer there.
Yes.
I remember we used to get calls. We were getting calls before COVID from the, from hard money lenders saying if, you know, we were interested in picking up some of their houses that they're having to foreclose on. And I was like, man, you guys are a little loose with your money, huh? So, yeah, they've been lending money to people that just they should not be lending to. So I guess this really was a wake-up call for them.
Right, right.
Yeah,
because that's something actually too, that's a really good point. So a lot of times with hard money lenders, you just kind of give them, you tell them what the budget's going to be and what the repairs are going to be. But sometimes those don't make sense. Like sometimes they're looking to do a full rehab for, I don't know, let's say 20, 30 grand. Like it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So the numbers look good on paper, but the numbers are not realistic.
Yeah.
So, I've seen that happen quite a bit.
So with everything that's going on, right? The rates are going back up for people that are getting catching COVID and all of that they're getting sick again. Do you have any concerns moving forward for your business? Like, do you have any reservations or anything that you're probably keeping an eye on? Or anything like that you're just, man, I don't know how this is going to shake out. We're going to have another shutdown. How's this going to affect me then? Like, what are you thinking about the future?
I mean, the main, I don't know. This is really uncharted waters, you know. There's so many things I've tried to look at, but this is something that's never, I think, happened before, where we have the shutdowns and people not being able to go to work and all the different requirements and restrictions. So I don't, it's really hard to tell what's going to happen on that end, but I just make sure not to buy bad deals. I'm not getting stuff under contract and closing on stuff that, that's not a very good deal. So, making sure that there's a lot of margin to have some extra things come up during that deal and then have the market come down as well, and still not be losing money. And also kind of the market that we play in too, I think is big too. So I don't like to deal with any high end stuff. So with some of the higher end deals, you can make more money per deal a lot of times, but to me, it's a little bit more risky because, I think they get affected more and they tend to, even in a great market, they have higher days on market in those higher end properties. But if there's going to be drops in prices, I feel like it's going to be a lot more in the higher end stuff. So in San Antonio, I think our average price is like 270 or so. I'm trying to stay, you know, below 250 ARV for the properties that are that I do deals on. And I think that's another good hedge too, because we've had really low inventory there. Mm-hmm. So it really will take a whole lot to, you know, swing things around to where properties go from appreciating so much to where they're depreciating in those price points. So I try to fish only in that pool, that pond.
Right. And do you, I think that's a really good point, trying to stick with properties that are going to sell quick, right? So yeah. you target that medium price point and you, at least you know that there's a buyer for it.
Yeah. They're going to sell quicker and there's plenty of people that can afford those properties. Whereas, you know, your $500,000, $400,000 house, there's a lot smaller buyer pool.
Right.
Okay. For our market, you know, it's different every market, but for our market, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Here in San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, they're all different. But here in San Antonio, I completely agree. I mean, we do a lot of the same. So are foreclosures, do you see them rising anytime soon? Have you noticed a change? Do you market to them?
Mm-hmm. So foreclosures, there haven't been many postings. That's something that's been kind of hard for me to tell because there haven't been many postings because a lot of the auctions have been, the auctions have been being postponed. And then also the government's put some, I think, moratoriums on, you know, the FHA and the government-backed loans being foreclosed on. So there haven't been a whole lot of foreclosures. I think there will be an increase in them for sure with all the people that had forbearance because they're going to have to do loan mods. Some of those people won't be able to qualify for the loan mods, maybe because they lost their job and now they're in a different industry. And I mean, that's one of the big requirements too when you're qualifying for a loan is how long you've been in the industry, what your income is. And if those things have changed, it might be a lot tougher to qualify for those loan mods. So I think there definitely will be more foreclosures. More pre-foreclosure properties, not necessarily that they're going to be going to actual auction getting foreclosed on, but those people that are going to need to sell because they're behind or they took that forbearance, they're going to need to have someone to, you know, help them out of that situation.
So you're preparing for something like that. You're what, watching foreclosure listings and kind of seeing if it starts ticking up, you're going to kind of jump back in. Like, what are you seeing as far as that?
It really, so ultimately I think what's going to happen with that depends on what the government does. So if they decide that they're going to offer more assistance to those people, then it could really prevent a lot of the foreclosures or just kind of stop them altogether. So it really depends. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that they'd be giving people so much forbearance, but it happened. So again, it's really tough to say what's going to happen. But I know if it does happen, then a great thing to offer those people, again, is going to be like the subject to stuff. There's a lot of creative ways to work the subject to deals as well. Like besides just, you know, holding them long term, it's where I bought properties subject to, held them very short term and flipped them. So a lot of things like that, I think would be good to kind of doing like a equity partnership with the seller, to where they're not getting their money up front. I just take over their loan, do whatever stuff needs to be done to it, resell it and get them to get paid off, when a property gets resold. Some things like that I think could be beneficial when the sellers have a short time frame to sell the property, but they know they have equity. They don't necessarily want to take, you know, bottom dollar for it. Some creative stuff like that I think would be good for them.
Yeah. The one word of advice that I would put out there for partnering with a seller is that you're partnering with a seller. They're very emotional, so it's something that you're going to have to be dealing with throughout the process. So you have to really gauge that, you know, because it could turn into a nightmare very quickly where you're like, this shit is not worth it. You know, making everything that much harder to do. So definitely, you know, something to keep in mind. Kind of wrapping up here a little bit, a lot of great information. I think you covered a lot on marketing that, you know, I think you hit some good points where there is no science to marketing, right? It's a lot of trial and error. You got to get into it. You just can't stop. You got to have consistency. You got to have tracking methods so you see what works, what doesn't work. So what would be something that maybe we haven't covered in marketing that you think people should keep an eye out for or keep in mind?
I mean, the real big thing is that there's, you know, we mentioned there's so many different lists, so many different ways to market to people. The most important thing I think when it comes to marketing is focus, and not getting sidetracked, not hearing about another new strategy or another new list, and then abandoning what you're doing and going and doing that because you hear someone got a $40,000 assignment fee or bought a super discounted property from that list. That I think is the most important thing. And then also on that same note too, also being a little creative and thinking outside the box yourself, because while you can differentiate yourself from other people, it definitely helps to, you know, while you can differentiate yourself from other people on the same list or talking to the same people, it helps if you can have less competition too. Try to find some different ways to reach out to people or different people to reach out to altogether with some of these different lists. And it also, it helps so much too if you really focus on being a problem solver and not just looking for that low hanging fruit. So, you know, one thing I think I've learned pretty well is understanding title, understanding probate problems, and knowing things like the statutes of limitations and who to reach out to for certain things, because there's certain problems out there that happen with properties. I can kind of go back to, so for instance, there's a house just closed on last month, and this property had a deed that the title company wasn't willing to accept. So that would have killed the deal. She got the property in 2008 from her mom. She didn't record this deed till 2013 after her mom passed away. So something like that, I was looking through all the property code and everything, and there was nothing that said that it was required to be recorded, but the title company wasn't willing to insure it. So after giving them a lot of pushback and going through everything, speaking with an attorney, I was still able to figure out how to get that deal done and closed. So just knowing some stuff like that is going to help a lot to where you can figure out how to solve some of these problems with title, and kind of legal issues a little bit too, where you can't just get it under contract and wholesale it. You might have to refer them to a probate attorney. You might have to walk them through probate. You might have to go do the affidavit to heirship and maybe track down a couple people here and there. To get the deals done. So that's a big thing too. I look for those properties where there's, you know, deceased people, where there's, you know, back taxes, where there's a problem to be solved. I really look for like problems.
Right.
Like just the low hanging fruit with equity.
Yeah. And for everybody that's listening and you're probably freaking out because you don't understand half of the terms he probably threw out, that's Sorry. The reason why you partner. That's the reason why you find somebody like Mike did when he first got started that, you know, he can bring a deal to and say, hey, I have these situations, these problems, and they can walk you through it. And you can learn the right way and what to do and how to do it with confidence. So then the next time it presents itself, it's not so scary, you know, and as you keep going, it just gets better and better and you become a better investor.
That's right. Yeah, I'm definitely open to partnering with people, helping people out to close the deals. Yeah, not necessarily partnering, but if someone's got a question too about how to handle something or my take on it, I'm more than happy to help answer that.
Nice. Well, that's really good. We always need good people that other people can reach out to. When I got started, it was 7-8 years ago. Man, I didn't have a lot of people I could reach out to. Everybody was out for theirs. Nobody wanted to share anything. Like it was tough getting started and you know, not knowing what the hell I was doing. I mean, I screwed up so many deals and lost, like never where anybody lost anything because I just lost a deal, but right. I just didn't know what the heck I was doing. But yeah, definitely partnerships and partnering and everything is so key. I wanted to kind of ask you a more personal question. With everything that's been going on lately with this, you know, Black Lives Matter and the rioting and everything, have you ever felt, you know, like you've had issues in this space because you're Black?
Man, that's a good question. No, I haven't. I haven't. And so when I also got into real estate too, I think I was 19 when I closed my first deal. So I was young and I was Black. I think that it's one of those things, like if you kind of have it in your head that, you know, people hate you because you're a certain color or whatever, it's, you're going to see it a lot more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I work with people that are white. I mean, people that are of all colors out there, no issues. So I think as you carry yourself professionally, at a young age, I mean, I think I carried myself pretty professionally. No one even asked me how old I was or anything like that. Like they didn't know they were signing a contract with the 19-year-old kid. Right. So it's, to me, it's not that big of a deal. I don't want to make it seem like there's no racism out there, but I don't think it's nearly as big or as common as people make it seem. And I definitely don't agree with the fact that it's only one way, because I guess being Black, I see people that are Black and say things about other races. So there's also a double standard out there too, that you can kind of, that racism is only one way and it's okay one way, but not the other. But also, yeah, I really just don't focus on that at all. And I think that's the biggest thing, because I don't focus on it so much. It's, I don't see it as much. So.
And it's good because you've never used it as a crutch to not get into this, right? Like you never used it as why you can't do real estate is because you're Black or because you're young or because, you know, you didn't have the right education or anything. Like I think that's the great thing with real estate is, it's a kind of business that doesn't care what you are or who you are, as long as you know what the hell you're doing and you do it correctly. There's a place for you in this.
Yeah. I think you could say that about almost all business and really capitalism. Whoever is the best, whoever's going to solve the problem best or have the best product is really going to win at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So just focus on that. I mean, if I can solve that seller's problem, I'm going to get the deal. It doesn't matter what race that person is. I mean, if I can solve their problem, they're not going to tell me no.
You just offended a bunch of people by throwing the word out capitalism. You know, that's a very offensive word.
Yeah, I know. I know I've offended a lot of people with me not agreeing to with the Black Lives stuff, but that's the way I feel. I mean, I can't lie about my opinion.
Exactly. I mean, it's how you feel. It's who you are. And that's how you experience it. It's not, you know, it's your truth. So. Wrapping up, what is an advice that you would give somebody? So let's say you lost everything now and you had to start over right now today in today's market, fresh from scratch, you have no money. What is it that you give that advice to somebody or you wish you would have known when you got started in real estate?
So this is starting off with no knowledge as well?
Yeah.
Okay, starting off with no knowledge. I think, you know, I partnered a lot starting off, which I think was the right move. So I think recommending for someone else to do that, to partner, you know, I think there's a lot of mentorship and gurus and things out there. And it's not necessarily that they're bad, but there's nothing like really having that one-on-one mentorship and having someone who's also in the same market as you to kind of show you the ropes. Because there's so many things that are different. I mean, it's hard to learn from someone who's in Florida about what's going on in Texas, because we have different laws, different statutes, different property code, different contracts that we should be using, all kinds of things like that. So there's a lot of value in that. And also just be consistent. You know, stuff's not going to happen right away overnight. Just like so many other professions, you know, the doctors, lawyers, all these other people go to school for so long and kind of study their craft. It's what we have to do too. There's no degree required for real estate, or certificate or anything, but you still have to study and you still have to learn. You still have to network and do all that stuff to become a master at the craft. I'm still learning a lot and trying to become a master myself. But really put that time in and be consistent with it.
Yeah. Very great advice. Well, Mike, I wanted to really thank you again for coming on. I think you shared a lot of great knowledge and, you know, a lot of great points that people just, maybe it's the same thing kind of when you got started, right? You think can't be that simple, but the truth is that it is that simple. It's just not that easy, right?
Yeah.
It's persistence, it's work, it's, you know, it failing over and over and just not giving up. That is really the key to you succeeding in this or really in any business.
Yeah. There's no magic to it. It's the consistency more than anything. And, you know, learning from others, keep going at it.
Yeah. So Mike, I wish you the best of luck with everything moving forward. I hope to, keep doing deals with you moving forward. And everybody, I'm going to be putting his information, on our website as soon as I upload this. So for you, those of you watching, you want to reach out to him, I'm going to put his email, his phone number, his personal address, I'll be putting all his information.
Not so much.
Okay. But I'll be putting all his information. So if you have any questions on marketing, or you want to partner with Mike, or you want to do, you know, learn anything that of what he's doing, this is one of the few people that I do recommend you talk to. At least for right now, he's a great guy. I don't know if he ever gets you know, too big for everybody, but definitely somebody that you can, that you should be in contact with. I put his handle right underneath his name, so you can reach out to him on social media. And sir, thanks again for coming on. And I hope to have you back once you share, you know, what the next, how this whole thing affected you and how you progressed and how you grew a massive business. So very excited to see that transformation from you.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for coming. And thank you, everybody, for watching. And I will catch you guys on the next episode.